It's poverty.
It's crime.
Unemployment.
Corruption.
Accountability.
The energy crisis.
Inflation.
We are worried.
That South Africa has myriad problems on all fronts is a given. But the time has come for us to look for real solutions. I'm Jeremy Maggs, and this MoneyWeb podcast will discuss those solutions on how South Africans can solve problems by having tough conversations and drawing on the insights of South Africa's top business leaders. Welcome to Fix SA. I guess inevitably we were going to get to this topic sooner rather than later. Let me introduce my guest to you this time around. It's Lavinia Ramkasoon. And in this episode, we're going to talk about her job as a futurist leader. She says she stands for the unification of the African tech space. She also goes on to say that she is a conscious technology creator with expertise in psychology, technology, and economics, but most importantly, their applications into artificial intelligence, blockchain, emerging tech, ethics, and data. And I love this watchword or this watch phrase, humanizing technology and actively serving as a growth enabler for tech talent. That's a nice tech phrase. Lavinia, a very warm welcome to you, and thanks so much for joining us. Lots to talk about, but let me start with a simple question. How excited are you, or how excited should we be about artificial intelligence?
That is definitely an easy question to ease us into quite a complex topic, so thank you for that. I think I am super excited. Like any emerging technology out there or any previous technology that has existed, I think, you know, the potential of it has always excited me. I think the possibilities are endless. And at the end of the day, it just boils down to how we end up applying it. I think I share your passion and excitement.
Do you think that we fully realize the potential just yet?
I think we have realized parts of the potential. I don't think we would completely see the full potential of it just yet. And there's a couple of reasons for that. I think it's coming to almost identifying the critical areas of what technology or what parts of AI can specifically bring.
So let's try and interlock now artificial intelligence to the broad theme of this conversation, which is about fixing South Africa. And I guess any port in a storm, but we are in the early phase, and this is something that those people committed to wanting to get things right in this country need to start applying their mind to. So let's jump into it, and let me ask you this question about why fostering innovation within the AI space is key to economic development. And how do we as a country ensure that we can use the power of AI to harness and create job creation? We can talk about competitiveness and inclusive growth a little bit later. But fundamentally, if we get this right, it's about creating more work, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. And I think, you know, when we have to talk about economic development in particular, for me, it really is around the power to generate mass impact. Now, what does that mean, both on a macro scale, a micro scale, and a nano scale in any country? And this kind of then, you know, takes us into all the different verticals that may exist, whether it be climate, financial, agricultural, healthcare, or, you know, I guess the list kind of goes on. Mm. And having said that, we also stand with the understanding that AI can contribute $900 trillion towards a global economy by 2030. We also have a good understanding that around 92 million odd jobs would be created through artificial intelligence and the birthing of this, right? So as we said earlier on, we're always being sold on the possibility, whether it be in politics or even in technology or even socially. And now it's about how do we actually start applying this to then best leverage everything that we have. And when you have to talk about harnessing AI for job creation or competitiveness and the rest of it, for me, it really boils down to how accessible is the technology. So with that is, can it actually spur innovation? Can it spur research? Can it help the growth of the economy? Do we have regulations in place that then best support that? That's the first. So accessibility. The other is really around infrastructure and, you know, knowledge, as well as the entirety of the ecosystem, right? Because I think if we look at things in part, we're going to land ourselves in trouble.
So let's pick apart a couple of those arguments that you've presented. The first one is about knowledge, which is absolutely critical. And knowledge is predicated on skills. And let me tell you, if I had 100 rand for every time the word skills is used in this podcast series, Lavinia, I wouldn't be doing the podcast. I would have retired somewhere with an AI chatbot, I guess. But having said that, though, it's critical that we develop the right mindset and the right skills around that. What are those skills that we as a developing economy can start working towards? And are those skills easily taught?
Yeah. So in terms of skills, it's a particularly interesting one. And there's varied sort of approaches globally around it. For me, it really is around, what is the base? So whether we're starting education from a primary school level into high school or even into academia at university levels or even post that, we've got to have a supportive ecosystem that allows for people of any age at any time to really upskill themselves or have the accessibility to upskill themselves in those particular areas. Now, traditionally, we've always relied upon corporates or governments to some extent to help lead that path. And I think with the exponential sort of digitization that happened during the pandemic, it allowed us to really kind of take a bit of control of that ourselves. So, everyone within a living room space was finding themselves being able to access any sort of education out there. And I think that really speaks to something called what's termed as liquid upskilling. Now, liquid upskilling is an area where we can allow ourselves to literally short term get the knowledge that is required on an emerging technology and not have to wait the full on 4-year degree that may be required. So it's almost like an intermediary bridge in between. So you can, eventually get to a degree, but, through these shortened courses, I think that's definitely one area. So what particular skills was your question? And I think for me, it's definitely around, engineering, around data, around AI. We can go into details into what specifically in those areas. But I think, for me, it is really around how do we not only see ourselves for the technology, but also the softer skills. So, for example, are we thinking about AI psychologists and how are we then preparing for that in the workforce? So, we're going to get to a point where we're going to have to observe artificial intelligence and how it actually behaves in a particular environment, whether it's self-learning or whether it is in a operational live environment. Like, that's a key example of where we may need to have to end up going towards.
I think that makes perfect sense, but let me pick up on another follow if I can. You talked about the importance of accessibility as far as this is concerned. What do you mean by accessibility and how do you make it more all-encompassing so that it has more universal pickup and universal applicability in our economy?
So traditionally, in my opinion, we've always sat with societal problems, right? It goes on and it predecesses both you and I for eons of times. But we're now adding this extra layer of what we call digital divide. Now, this digital divide really plays a part in terms of adding to social problems like extreme poverty, like no access to the internet, like no access to mobile devices. And those are some of the areas that we consider into this accessibility layer. So one is the accessibility to the actual technology, and the other is the accessibility to apply that technology. So, if we had to, for example, quickly have a look at extreme poverty as an example, we know that over 9.2% of the population kind of is sitting under the IPL, which is the international poverty line. And that's a large part of proportion, right? If we had to really then focus in or zone in within an Africa sort of viewpoint, we know that New Guinea and South Sudan kind of probably rank the highest when it comes to extreme poverty cases that exist out there. And for us, as an example, we can really start looking at how we can start solving those particular problems with the use of artificial intelligence, whether it be a normal supply chain of existing food supplies that need to get to, refugees and homeless people, or whether it's just allowing, simpler solutions like restaurants that have excess food to have, a notification system or a USSD code that gets sent to, you know, homeless and refugee people that can walk in and pick up food. You know, like, so whenever we talk about these particular areas, we've kind of got to go through the entirety of the life cycle of it, right? If we had to, for example, take another area of this, which is no internet access, right, and no mobile access, which we know are both very true and very pertinent within the context of Africa. You know, electricity is a baseline point when it comes to that, and non-interrupted electrical supply is something that is of a huge risk, you know, to this digital divide and sort of exponentially adding to that. So, you know, internet access, we probably sit with only about 65 or 66% of the population that actually has internet access at the moment. So, you know, there's still a large portion of us that don't sort of fall within that category. So again, mass of people that are not actually being considered as part of this mass upgrade or exponential upgrade that we're kind of seeing at this moment.
So I want to try and close the loop then. So in terms of applicability, so for instance, to use your example about improving matters down the value chain, if you use AI, and correct me if I'm wrong here, if you use AI to do that, that would then have an effect, a positive effect on productivity. That then has a good effect on the economy, which fundamentally would mean that the economy itself, whether it's the South African economy or any other economy, can start on that road to being fixed. Am I oversimplifying it, or have I got it right?
No, 100% right. I think, you know, for us, we always are baselining ourselves against value. And, you know, previously it was always about product value. Now it's about, you know, what is the created value? What is the created worth? And the created worth is kind of where we are going towards. So we previously had wanting to do everything in hyperscale. And that was really baselined around your product value. Now it's about your perceived worth or your created worth rather than an actual value that then gets attached. So, yeah, I mean, I think it is simple-ish to some degree. Yeah, we don't necessarily have to overcomplicate it.
No, no, that's fine. But as long as there's a positive outcome in terms of right-sizing and improving the economy. So let's look at a couple of other examples if we can. For instance, machine learning and AI, one of the other big issues that we're dealing with right now in South Africa is water resource management and water scarcity. If we get that right, we fix the country. So how would you overlock an AI solution to that in order to improve things?
I mean, water resource management is not an old sort of industry, first and foremost. So it's always been sort of baselined against two things. One is the quality. Second is the quantity of water. Right. Now, if we had to look at either or, I think AI or machine learning can play quite a large part in it. Right. Let me sort of delve a little bit into that. If we had to have a combination of IoT devices and AI, what we end up getting as an equation is real-time monitoring together with predictive analytics, together with preemptive monitoring. Now, I know I threw out a lot of like techie words, so let me like kind of give something tangible around
if,
that.
If you don't mind, yeah, let's just take it back a notch, but it's an important example.
Yeah, absolutely. So, for example, how do we go about ensuring that the water purification levels are actually on standard and on par all the time? Now, this is where AI can come in to help to monitor in real time what is the quality of water in a 24/7 cycle, right? Then we also have, for example, environmental impacts that we don't necessarily monitor at this point in time, or takes us a long time to then understand what the environmental impacts are of purifying that water. And also, what are the impacts of wastage? What is the impact of discharge that kind of then comes about? You know, if we had to then go to the second part of this, when we have to talk about quantity, you know, this is where we can really start looking at things like, you know, how do we reuse water as an example? What types of water is deemed okay to be reused for irrigation or for industrial or, you know, for portable water supplies? You know, those are things that then become a different type of conversation, which AI can then supply into. So, you know, whether it is supply shortage, early warning detections, those are things that can easily happen and be put into place, whether it's leakages, blockages, or even low end of, you know, reservoirs sort of coming through. So again, I think when it comes to water resource management, we definitely can do quite a lot. And, you know, if we had to like widen the view from just South Africa to Africa, as an example, imagine if we had all of the water mapped out in Africa, that will then give us in real time a good understanding of where all the water is actually flowing to, from, and the rest of it, together with the populations. Not only would it do that, it would also help us to understand in real time, if, for example, South Africa is facing a shortage of water, which other countries can actually redirect water to us in real time and actually make that a non-major issue. Now, the same can be said true if we had to do something like this, for example, when it comes to food supply.
So these practical examples, Lavinia, are really working well. So we've looked at the value chain in food supply. You've referenced water. If you look at any survey about what is wrong with South Africa, somewhere near the top five at least, people will say if we get crime right, fixing crime in other words, then and improving public safety, then things will be a whole lot better. Technology, artificial intelligence, I know is already being used in this space, but that has a huge role to play as well, does it not?
100%. And this is where I think ethics play quite a large role. We obviously know surveillance is one of the areas of artificial AI. And this is quite either a very invasive or very okay sort of scenario. So you can get public surveillance as well as, you know, private surveillance. Now, public surveillance is, for example, the likes of cameras that exist on streets that then monitor us walking, but also at the same time understand who we are in real time and start understanding all of our behaviors, right? In addition to that, we have something that was written about one of the South African companies in MIT, I think about a year ago, 2 years, around surveillance. And it's probably worth mentioning where, you know, it's, say, for example, if I, as Lavinia, am driving on the street and I have a camera that then captures my number plate, my number plate is then associated to a car. My car is associated to some form of insurance. That insurance is associated to me as a person with my ID, you know, and all of this information kind of then gets held somewhere. And nobody really understands to what degree it's actually held or then rather reused. And this is where the scary bit comes in, right? It's obviously of ethical concern because we really don't know what, one, they're doing with the data, but two, you know, how long they're holding that data for, and three, when does our data actually get erased from their actual systems? So it's quite a long loop of stuff. I know that we've been very good at having, for example, the data protection that has kept us in place for a long time, but, you know, we haven't had much enforcement of the data protection within our boundaries. So, you know, surveillance itself is quite a large thing. I mean, fighting crime, we've also seen, for example, in real time, cameras being used to really go and fixate on a crime that is happening in real time and tracking someone using either computer visioning software or the likes of, you know, biometrics to help to really narrow down this, right? And I think this definitely helps towards going in terms of shortening that crime turnaround time for capturing someone for committing a crime. I guess another area that is of quite importance is a year ago, I think I read an article that said South Africa is investing about R1 billion towards e-policing, which is another form of surveillancing, right? So if we have these bots that are walking around us and monitoring 24/7, what exactly are they capturing to what degree? Yes, it definitely adds a layer of no one would want to really entice or, you know, willfully want to commit a crime knowing that they're being watched and observed. I think this boils down to the psychological aspect of it. So, yeah, I mean, I think there are definitely ways of which we can do it. But again, I think there is no major strategic outlook of how we can actually tackle this problem. So what is the main sort of aim in terms of fighting crime? What is the main strategy and plan when it comes to utilizing of technology? If we have that and then work backwards to then applying it into our different public areas, I think that's a better approach rather than kind of finding small shift uses right now and then building upwards.
What I'm also hearing, though, is a strong warning that is being sounded, is that whatever the applicability with what you're doing, it's critical that ethics remains a cornerstone. And the problem, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, is that it's still pretty much the Wild West out there, that we don't in South Africa have a proper regulatory framework or charter just yet to guide people. We're still navigating our way through that. So it's all very well to have this technology as the fix, but what you're also telling me is that we've got to use it responsibly, and we need to be taught how to do that.
Absolutely, 1,000%. I don't think we can tell ourselves that ethics is not part of our daily lives. It's very much ingrained in us from the time we were born. And, you know, we don't need to teach someone right from wrong. This is inherently something we know. So I think, embedding it in our culture, whether it's at home or whether it's in a corporate environment or a governmental environment, it's something that needs to become something that we eat, breathe, and sleep.
So we're at the point now where you've illustrated just how important artificial intelligence is, Lavinia, in fixing South Africa. But what is it going to take for this country to put itself in the pole position to be able to use this? And secondly, for many people to overcome their fear and their skepticism?
Yeah, I mean, fear and skepticism is definitely there. And I think it's reigned from the era that we live in, which is FOMO, right? And for us, it's do we want to be part and parcel of that? Or don't we, and to what degree? So, we know that supposedly AI is taking away a lot of our jobs. So what do we end up doing? And I think it's a lot to do with education and awareness that we can actually get rid of some of these fears. It's not something that we should fear inherently, because at the end of the day, if you really had to think about it, we're building the AI. So why should we fear something that we're building and that we still have control of right now? It almost is saying that, well, we've given up everything to AI already, and we've lost the battle. And that's certainly not the case from my perspective. And we're still in full control. And it really depends on how we want to shift the fate of where we end up, right? And that economic gain that we want for everyone at the end of the day. So I think in terms of how we shape ourselves up and where we end up, I think policies play such a large role in terms of this, right? So we've got to start off with a strategy that then turns into a policy, and from a policy it actually ends up being a regulation or a past legislation or a bill, right? And that's generally the flow of anything. Somewhat we need to get much quicker and faster at executing that. I am aware that South Africa is putting together a task force at the moment of experts that are coming together to put something together for this particular strategy or policy. In addition to that, I think we need to have a lot more incentives in this area. What do I mean by incentives? Whether it is, for example, having startups have, really amazing IP incentives to stay in South Africa, that would be great. Whether it's incentives on an educational front or a research front. So educational front, can we offer PhDs to people within this particular field, or, master's degrees? When we talk about research, can we actually incentivize researchers to actually stay on within the South African borders and not rather leave? So, there's a lot that we can actually start doing in terms of accessing that early stages that may be required for us to then maintain and actually, at the end of the day, then benefit economically for everyone.
Lavinia Ramkasoon, you've given us an abundance of food for thought. Thank you very much indeed. I have really enjoyed this conversation. That is where we are going to leave it. Thanks for listening to this Fix SA podcast. For more episodes posted every second Friday, go to moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify, or follow MoneyWeb News on social media for more updates. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.